This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/talks. Hey folks, welcome back to another cool interview. This one's going to be really interesting. If you've been following me on This Week in Photo, or if you're subscribed to one of the This Week in Photo email lists, you probably saw a couple emails go out with me raving about a new piece of software that just hit the internet, or actually it's an update to a piece of software that hit the internet. Last year, Aurora jumped on the scene to revolutionize how people were looking at HDR photography with an aim to make it easier and more intuitive to use than some of the other tools that were out there today. They've updated the application to Aurora 2017, and I'm lucky enough to have two of the people that are behind that magic to explain it all to us and get a little, pull back the covers a little bit and look into the company, MacFun, that produces the software, to see what makes the company tick. And then we're going to dive in and get a look behind the scenes at how the masters of HDR edit an HDR photo. So joining me on the call is Alex Sepko. Alex is a managing partner at MacFun, and Kevin LaRue is the vice president at MacFun. So these are the guys that make the MacFun fun. So let's start by diving in. But first of all, thanks guys for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having us, Frederick.
And, I sent you guys some notes with the things that I wanted to go through. So off the top, I want to get some history on MacFun. So you guys, obviously your name has fun in the name. So, you know, you guys take a different approach to software. So I want to understand what that is and also kind of how the company works. So, you know, Kevin, you're down in Southern California, and Alex, you're over in the Ukraine. You guys are a distributed company, which is kind of the next generation of how these companies, you know, some software companies operate. Alex, can you give us a little history of MacFun and how it all came to be?
Sure. So it wasn't always that fun to start with. And frankly, you know, we are still considering ourselves a young company, and we're usually late with, you know, many things in terms of, you know, business preparations. So the reason it was named MacFun, frankly, is because the guys who founded it had probably 10 or 15 minutes before submitting the first app to the App Store, and they didn't have an app. And back then, they didn't have a name. So back then, it was only mobile apps. And, Paul, who was one of the founders, you know, figured out that Mac is a pretty cool starting point. And then MacFun with F was taken. So basically, they figured out that, you know, it can be P-H-U-N. Mm-hmm. And then how MacFun has started. But the interesting part that back then, when there were only two of them in a small apartment, was, you know, late 2008. No one was even thinking about doing the Mac software, and it was only, you know, the beginning of iPhone App Store craziness. So they started with the iPhone apps, and by the time they met me and hired me as a marketing guy, it was already 2010, middle of 2010, and the Mac App Store has already been, you know, launched. And that's when we figured out that, you know, after dozens and dozens of iPhone apps, we would try something with the Mac. Mm-hmm. And so we migrated from iPhone, started making Mac apps, and selling it only through the Mac App Store. And it worked pretty well. I mean, like, we've launched a bunch of consumer, you know, low-cost, low-priced photography software, like FX Photo Studio and a bunch of other apps. And then it went pretty well, but three of us actually thought that, you know, we should probably take a next step and move somewhere further. But because, you know, we were in Ukraine, never explored anything besides the Mac App Store, we kind of felt that, you know, we need more experience and boost and, you know, move outside, you know, our sandbox. Mm-hmm. So with a bunch of apps on the Mac App Store, we went to US, found a bunch of people on LinkedIn, and Kevin was one of them. And then eventually Kevin joined us in 2013 or 12. I'm not really sure when that was. And that was basically a beginning of a, you know, real MacFun growth and success. And and real history of MacFun. So if you want, you know, MacFun is about 4 years old as a company, as you know it right now. So,
that is
you know,
so weird. I felt like you guys have been around much longer than that. I mean, maybe that's a testament to Kevin and the marketing and you guys and how you do things. But MacFun to me feels like it almost feels like a staple in the Mac creative software world right now. Right. You guys have only been here for 4 years.
Kevin is doing a great job, frankly, and as well as the whole team. And it's because the name and we've got the MacFun.com and registered the company back in 2008. But then, you know, for 2 years we did iPhone apps, then we were doing experiments with Mac App Store apps. But frankly, with the launch of a San Diego office, we kind of like shifted to more professional and prosumer software and got, you know, serious about development and research. And basically, you know, in 2013 or 12, I don't remember, we launched Snapheel Pro on the Mac App Store. Mm-hmm. And that's our first more or less, you know, super popular software for Mac where we got, you know, App of the Year from Apple. And basically, yeah, so it started around 2012 and 13 where we got serious about the research, development, team, growth, and, you know, thinking outside the Mac App Store and, you know, all things like that. So, yeah, so in these 4 years, we've got a bunch of new apps, almost 50 people working in across the world in different offices. We also have some freelancers helping us in Japan and Germany and UK with, you know, local type of marketing. So it's, yeah, it's it has been a great journey, still a beginning. You know, definitely Aurora HDI is one of those products that is probably level 3 of MacFun. So it's a product that we plan to keep, plan to develop, and, you know, keep it growing. And then we're also launching a brand new product in November that will basically be, so Aurora and that new product will basically be our core development, and then we'll move eventually to Windows and to web-based solutions and things like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that was my list of questions to ask you, because, you know, a lot of the feedback that I've been getting from people that I've been, you know, that have been commenting on the Aurora 2017 pre-launch that you guys just did, they've been asking, okay, yeah, this is great, but what about a Windows version? You know, so that is that in the works?
Oh, man, Windows is tough. Way tougher than Mac, Franklin. Sorry, Apple, but Windows is tough. It's because so many models. We have like, I think we have like 12 or 15 different laptops over here that run Windows, and they're all different brands, all different resolutions, all kinds of different, you know, behaviors. But yeah, the Windows version is coming this spring. I know that Kevin has been looking forward to it for years. And even though Kevin is a heavy, you know, Mac and dedicated Apple user, but we all know that many photographers are on Windows. And frankly, we kind of like were hesitant about the Mac or about the Windows platform first. And Kevin has been arguing and, you know, talking us into making a Windows version for years. And over these years, we see how, yeah, it's a huge market. And, you know, I'm really sorry that I haven't listened to the US guys earlier. And, you know, we haven't made our developers, you know, shift earlier. But
you
yeah,
that's really interesting.
He's been a big influence on that, too.
I was going to say, that's really interesting that you say, yeah, well, yeah, we developed for the Mac and we've had a lot of success with the Mac, but we're noticing that there's a Windows audience that's pretty big too. It used to be the opposite, right? It used to be, you know, Mac, there's a Mac version of some software coming soon, you know, and the Mac users would have to wait and wait and wait. And finally we get a Mac version and it wouldn't be as good as the Windows version. There would be features missing. Yeah. Right, and now we're seeing movement in the opposite direction now, right?
Right, but see, it's how it usually happens. You know, people, you know, very few people usually look around that much as we want these people to look. And usually, people are in their sandboxes. They just stick there and think that the whole world is basically in this particular sandbox. So, frankly, you know, starting with a Mac App Store and doing Mac apps, we kind of like were in this Mac community, which is great, amazing, and fantastic. But we've never looked at, Windows PC world as it is. And then as we grew bigger and bigger, we've started getting, you know, a lot of emails and phone calls from people all around the world asking about Windows. And we were like, yeah, let's look outside the box. Let's be, you know, let's open our eyes wider. Let's be, you know, more progressive and more professional. Let's not just keep ourselves in this little sandbox. And so we now plan to support both communities. And frankly, you know, photography and videography and creativity is something that's not, you know, locked inside, you know, an OS or a specific Mac, right?
Totally. So, yeah, it's just a tool. It's just a tool. So then, Alex, I know you got to go soon. I want to just a couple more questions before I let you off the hook here. So you mentioned that MacFund started in iOS development and then made the transition into macOS development, and now you're moving, hopefully in the spring, towards Windows to address the demand from Windows. What about Android? Have you guys considered like swinging in that direction and putting things in the Google Play Store?
Oh, I can talk about this for hours and hours, but I don't want to look too promotional to you guys. You know, I still know that we need to talk about some serious things. Yeah. So the trick is that Windows, so we'll definitely have a web-based solution, like an online, you know, photo enhancement thing. Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely be on Mac. And the thing with iOS and Android is that the mobile part to our business is a completely different story. So we kind of like, we will port some of the software to mobile devices for sure. But the big plan is to have a brand new, different software on mobile, just because the way people behave on mobile and how they use their iPhones is, yeah, you know, is a lot different. So you don't expect a person to do a complex, you know, HDR enhancement on the iPhone. Right. So, but instead of this, we have a bunch of cameras in development that will instantly create that kind of a look, shoot better photos that won't require a lot of editing, because you know, you remember 2010 and 11 when there was when a word like mobile photography and iPhoneography was extremely trending, and then people were spending hours and hours editing on their iPhones. But right now it's more about some quick tweaks and sharing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we will go to an Android and iOS and other platforms, but you know, it just doesn't make sense to port, you know, Tonality or Snapheel or Aurora or any one of the super big apps to
making more. I think there's a couple of use cases. There's a use case of when I'm having dinner with a friend and I want to take a shot and I want it to instantly look good. But we're seeing more and more professionals start executing professional workflows with mobile software, either on an iPad Pro or even with the iPhone 7, you know, with the new dual camera. And now that these cameras support RAW, I want to see, this is my personal request to you, the gods of MacFun, I would like to see a mobile iPad version, you know, on the phone. Yeah, I don't want to do HDR stuff on the phone. I just want to take a picture and you guys can make it look better instantly. But on an iPad Pro, I want to be able to take a RAW or a DNG file and finish it, at least finish it to the level where I can maybe sync it over to MacFun on the Mac and do my final touches. But if not, I want to get it to 99% on an iPad Pro and
rock and roll from there. If talking about the iPad Pro, so you asked about, so when I answered your question, it was more about the mobile and Android, like a smartphone.
Yeah, small devices.
iPad is a beast. It's a crazy animal that's so powerful, and we'll definitely have all the software there. It's just so awesome. It's the next step, and so it will definitely be there, for
that's
sure.
Cool. That's cool. All right, you heard it here. I got the promise from Alex Sepko in Ukraine. He said he's gonna make it happen.
I never like people on Google Hangouts.
So. Awesome. Well, Alex, I know you got to run. You got a ton of things to get done over there. Thanks for popping in this call. I appreciate it. I got what I wanted to get out of this. I wanted to get an insight into how MacFun was created and what your mindset is around developing the software, and then kind of a peek into what's coming. I know there's that mystery. You notice I didn't follow up on that mystery product you mentioned. No. So I'm going to hammer Kevin on that.
You'll be blown away. You'll be blown away. One quick thing is that, so we have two great ladies in the marketing team here in Kiev, and they're usually very cautious about all new products. So whenever developers show something, they're like, well, is it, how different it is. And they're super pessimistic about all the new developments. So when the development team and myself showed them that, you know, new product, the very alpha version of it, the first thing they asked is how is it different from Lightroom or Creative Kit or like any other software? And then Dima, who is one of the founders, and basically a brain behind all the software. He spent an hour with them showing like all the things, and you know, they went out speechless. It was just a terrific experience, you know, blowing the mind of a person who is super pessimistic and who can never be surprised about anything.
I love it. Well, that sounds like me. You know, it's hard to surprise me. So if you can surprise me with it, then you got something.
Hey, if I surprise you with that thing, I'm buying tickets, flying directly to you, and treating you with a big glass of beer then.
All right, there you go. Well, I can tell you now, I'm already surprised. So done. You can just make that. All right, Alex, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. It's been great. And we should talk again soon.
I am all for that. I'm all for that. So thanks again. And I'll let Kevin, you know, continue with that. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise. Have a good day. Yeah.
Talk soon.
Yep. All right, Kevin. Oh, that was great. So, Kevin, what's this mystery product? What was it?
You heard it? Yeah, well.
He's out of the room now. He can't hear us. So tell us, what's the mystery product?
I haven't had the demo that apparently the girls have had. So so I've got almost zero knowledge about it. He left that as safe as he possibly could in my hands.
Yeah, he's artful with the words, right? He's got, Alex has that Steve Jobian kind of, I'm going to tell you something's coming, but you're not going to know. But I'm going to tell you that you really want it, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Until we reveal it. And the reveal is going to be great.
Yeah. So Kevin, take us through Aurora. So just before we dive in, I want to do a demo with you. Before we dive into that, I want to talk a little about the software itself and what's it for. So there's lots of competition out there. You know, you guys came into a field. And this is interesting. So you came into a field that was kind of owned by Photomatics, right? So, and Trey Ratcliffe kind of started stuck in customs and his HDR workflow tutorial based on Photomatic software. You guys somehow did a Jedi mind trick on him and wooed him over. You wooed him over to Mac Fun. Tell me about all that. You know, why did you guys think that, okay, we can jump into this already crowded market, and you know, there's a stigma associated with HDR, much of it driven by Trey. So how did that come about?
Well, that's a great question, a great story in and of itself. I think if you go back through the catalog that MacFun has done over the past few years, you'll see that we may have been late to market in a sense into a category. But there's also been so much time elapsed between the last sort of leader software and our development that there's a whole new generation of photographers that have come up that we can show our product to, don't have any knowledge of the prior product. So think about Tonality, for example. I mean, that product was built to be the successor to everything else that was out there in terms of converting images to black and white. And we even hired a fellow who had worked on some of that other software to come in and make sure that everything in Tonality exceeded whatever the baseline was out there. I think our noise reduction software is another great example. Noiseless is a fantastic piece of software. It's all automated, very easy to do selective noise reduction. But nobody thought about noise reduction for 5 years. And so I think we were in that, playing a little bit of that same game with HDR. Everybody acknowledges that Photomatics is, was the leader back prior to Aurora. We built Aurora to be the world's finest HDR product. And so getting back to the Trey angle, you know, I remember being in San Francisco in a hotel lobby on the phone with he and his business partner, Curtis. And, you know, we were just kind of catching up. And I know the guys at I think we were at a worldwide developer conference a few years back. And the management team at MacFun was with me. And I'm just off in the corner having this conversation. And they talked about the state of HDR and how nothing really had been done in a few years. And I knew that we were looking for another project. And so I said, well, what if we collaborated on a new piece of HDR software that specifically met your needs, streamlined your workflow, Trey, and they jumped in with both feet. It's been a tremendous collaboration between all of us. And again, you know, we were bringing in, you know, sort of our side of the business, which was the classical photo corrections and enhancements side. Trey was bringing in that tremendous HDR knowledge of, you know, what works, what doesn't, what a great workflow is, et cetera. And I think it's been a great partnership to date.
That is wonderful. And I'm on your website now, just clicking through some of the different products that you guys have. This stuff is fantastic.
Oh yeah.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, that's our focus product right there. That's great.
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So if you're listening to this, folks, sorry for that. If you're listening to the audio version, I'm stepping through the MacFun.com website, and they've got some cool demos on there. I just clicked on the creative kit icon in the menu, and they've got some really cool interactive demos on the page where you can just click and drag and see what the filters are going to do to these images live. So really good stuff, Kevin. That's crazy. So you guys, so like I said, 4 years. It's taken 4 years to do this. The plugin, and this is no longer a plugin. So this it used to be the world. There was Photoshop and Lightroom, and then a constellation or ecosystem of plugins. And now we're seeing these standalone applications that in many cases will round trip out of Lightroom or Photoshop, but they're standalone apps that you can run exclusively from Lightroom or Photoshop. Is that the direction where things are going away from the plugin?
You know, let me, I loved the way that Alex characterized MacFun as being about, in its current evolution, about 4 years old. You know, that's true. We really took, when we went to the Mac App Store, really got our minds around, it took a couple of years to get our minds around selling software off of our website, going direct to consumers and having that relationship, you know, with our customers that the Mac App Store really doesn't give you. And I think we've had these evolutions of mobile Mac App Store exclusively. And now we're, you know, we've got our own website, and the sales there are fantastic, far eclipse the Mac App Store now. But that experience of delivering standalone software from the Mac App Store, remember, none of those products were plugins. You can't deliver a plugin through the Mac App Store due to Apple sandboxing. Right. So we had a great experience and a deep experience in delivering standalone software. So from the moment we began publishing our pro line of software, Noiseless, Tonality, Focus, you saw some of those in the when you were scrolling our website, all of those have been both plugin and standalone. So for people that maybe find Photoshop or Lightroom too complex, or they've never, or they're brand new to being a photographer and they're just looking for a quick tool to use, our standalones work perfectly for them. For the pro guys who already have an established workflow through image management and editing, they can certainly run our software as a plugin.
Love it. So who's the main competitor for you? Who keeps you up at night? Is it Adobe, you know, that they may ingest some of your features and make them integral to Lightroom? Or is it like an On1? Like who's planning your space?
You know, as you correctly point out, there's a lot of people. Obviously, the 800-pound gorilla is Adobe. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, for all of the plugin manufacturers and all the like you say, the photography ecosystem guys, I mean, there's always the threat or the anxiety that Adobe will glom onto a key feature of yours and subsume it. But that's an opportunity for us to keep, it keeps us sharp. In many ways, we're forced to go much deeper into a given tool. For example, our SnapHeal product has 9 different algorithms for doing content-aware fill and spot healing, right?
Yeah, which is magical.
Photoshop, you got the one thing, right? And so noise reduction. I mean, you know, there's very little of that in Photoshop, but Noiseless looks at smartphone images, looks at RAW files. And so you've got some tremendous capabilities for each one of these things. So to answer your question more pointedly, you know, I don't sleep much. Everybody keeps me up at night. But as I say, that just kind of keeps us sharper.
That's good. You know, and I'm playing again with this Snap Heal thing. This is the if it works as well as it's working in these demos, this is amazing. You know, it is really, really cool. That's some cool software some cool algorithms you have in the background that are helping me remove things from the foreground so that I can have a seamless photo. Magic.
Well, and frankly, you know, thinking about our audience coming, many of them come from the Mac App Store. They might be new to the Mac, all the way up to the pros. All that software is super easy to use. And, you know, you talk about, you know, does it work as well? We have to make it work great in the maximum amount of time, maximum amount of instances, rather.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, let's dive in. Let's get a look at it. So I've been poking around on the website. I want to see Aurora and Aurora 2017. Before you screen share, set it up for me. So you had Aurora, you launched it. The year has gone by, and now we're in Aurora 2017. What are the major differences?
So this is I'm really excited about this, Frederick, because we launched the product last November. November 2015. And, you know, the interest in this thing, whether it was due to, you know, Trey's talking about it and starting to show his art form with it, you know, coupled with our ability to reach out to our customers, et cetera, it's really been a very, very popular product for us. And so it compelled us really to amp up the development. We paid very close attention to what our customers were looking for. In terms of what is new and I think pretty key, and I'll touch on a few of these things in the, there's Joseph Lanashke. I'll touch on a few of these things in the demo, but things like we had a lot of customers ask us about batch processing. A lot of our photographer friends, you know, Trey, Jim Nix, other folks, really, really enjoyed the luminosity masking. And so we've kind of throttled forward on that a bit. Polarizing filters, fantastic. So there's about 20 to 30 new features as well as a revised interface that your Aurora HDR users will see here pretty quickly.
Wow. So, well, let's dive into it.
I'm excited. Yeah.
I'm having too much fun on your website. Your website is brilliant, by the way. Is this your brainchild?
No. This Alex and the team over there are super creative. I'm a little bit older, so I'm used to very, you know, plain websites, but they are at the cutting edge of what's cool and interesting. We get a lot of compliments on the website, and I'll pass that on to the design team.
They're very, very well done. It's engaging. It makes me want to click around and try things. It makes me, you know, clicking through these demos makes me want to go buy the software. So I guess it's doing its job.
I like it.
This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So you're racing against the clock to wrap up three projects. You're prepping for a photo shoot later in the afternoon, all while trying to tackle a mountain of paperwork. Welcome to life as a freelance photographer. Challenging? Yes, but our friends at FreshBooks believe the rewards are so worth it. With freelancers and small business owners in mind, FreshBooks has announced the launch of an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. It's been redesigned from the ground up and custom-built for our needs, photographers. FreshBooks has created a super intuitive tool that makes it easy to create and send professional looking invoices in less than 30 seconds. You can easily customize your invoice with your logo, color scheme, or any image that reflects your brand. You'll be able to see what invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid, as well as overdue and outstanding invoice totals. You can even chat with your client regarding an invoice once they receive it. The modern and simplified dashboard works as the hub of your business, answering the most important question: how is my business doing? You'll have quick access to outstanding balances, spending, total profit, and accounting reports like tax summary and profit and loss. Tracking expenses is as easy as taking a photo of your receipt and using the FreshBooks iOS app. You can track expenses by vendor and by category, and time tracking makes it easier to bill for time by client and by specific projects. You can easily start your timer and track your time to the minute. And when it comes time to create an invoice, you'll know what you did and when you did it. So get ready for the simplest way to be more productive and organized, and most importantly, get paid quickly. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to the TWIP audience. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/TWIP and enter TWIP in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today. And we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of This Week in Photo.
Where we're going to start is in the Finder window, just like any other Finder window. And what you should be seeing now is a Finder window that includes five different images. Let me just show you one of these images. This is one of the exposures that we're going to be using with Aurora. So I'm going to take these images. I'm going to drop them down into my Aurora 2017 on the dock, and that will launch the application.
Cool.
So while that's going, I'm going to make sure that we're switching over to Aurora here. And let's see.
Okay. And while you're launching that, the naming for Aurora 17. So you guys started with Aurora HDR Pro, and then cool. This next version is Aurora 2017. Are you going to move forward with the year? And that kind of indicates that you're going to be releasing a new update every year.
Right? Yeah, that's certainly the goal. Actually, Aurora HDR was our baseline version that was shipped and launched in the Mac App Store. Mm-hmm. HDR Pro is the plug-in and standalone version that we sell off of our website. The new Aurora HDR 2017 is essentially the replacement for the Pro version. And the idea is to kind of continue updating it, mm-hmm. Keeping it current. You know, we always have several releases, minor updates per year to keep up with raw camera files and things of that nature, any system issues that we need to fix.
Yeah, of course.
Those are rolled out automatically. Cool. So hopefully you can see my screen right now.
I can, yeah. I see five images of varying exposures.
That's right. We've got exposure value -2, -1, 0, plus, and 1, and +2. And the idea, the whole concept behind HDR is to extend the dynamic range of the image to more closely approximate what your eye sees. Mm-hmm. So if you were typically taking this image, you'd probably get this middle straight out of camera. You'd probably get this middle to blend them together and create a single unified image.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know that this image was taken on a tripod, so I don't even need to check the alignment. I'm just going to go ahead and create the HDR, and then what will happen is we get a nice little window here. Software does its thing, and as you can see, it's brought together all five of those images into one. One looks like a great natural naturally toned image.
And then, Kevin, the screen share ended. I'm looking at you now. I don't see Aurora anymore.
Oh, you are? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Frederick. Let me make sure that's interesting. Let's see. Okay, how about now?
Okay, now it's loading. Okay, now I see it. Good.
Okay, cool. All right, back again, little technical gremlins. All right. Mm-hmm. So this is the baseline Aurora HDR 2017 interface. We cleaned up a lot of things. It's a lot fresher. Straight out the gate, if I look at the middle exposure and then what ultimately was created by blending those five exposures together, you can see real quick, there's the before, there's the after. It's already looking a lot sharper. And by sharper, I don't mean like overclocked or overcooked. What I mean is just it's a more pleasing to the eye image. Mm-hmm. So a typical workflow would be to start here. And then a lot of folks will actually start with our presets. Our presets here are neatly categorized. So you can see basic, realistic, landscape. We've got some presets from Trey and also a fellow named Captain Chemo. He's a South Florida shooter. Serge Ramali switches time between Paris and LA. But we've got these guys that are all experts at HDR, and they've created their own presets for us based on their own unique looks.
And those presets, just to be clear, those aren't filters or anything that's doing anything permanent to the image. These are starting points that are essentially Trey went in and created a look by moving the sliders and then saved out the preset. So I can then go in and change where Trey started at, correct?
Yeah, exactly right. In fact, I was just about to do that.
Cool.
Show that to your audience. So let's go in here and just try a realistic bright preset. So I'm going to make one click on it, and you'll see that the image will change to reflect that preset. Now, if it's a little bit too harsh for me, or there's something that I think just changing the opacity level or the intensity of the preset will take care of, I can simply dial that down on a nice quick slider here to something that's you know, more reaches my vision for the image. Now, notice when I click on the presets button there, presets go away, but you can see in our tool palette we have several tools that are gold in color and some that are still white. Mm-hmm. Those presets that were gold in color, let's take a look at image radiance here, you can see some of their sliders have been moved, and that was the preset doing that. That preset consisted of those changes to those tools, so there's a little bit of image radiance. Image radiance is a really kind of a dreamy, glowy feel. I just increased a little bit, or I can decrease it more towards where the preset started. Structure. Again, structure gives us a lot of the fine details you see in the wood grain here. If that's a little bit too harsh, I can bring that back. I can bring that back. And we can then use the preset as a starting point. Mm-hmm. So great question, and I hope you can see that it's also a great way to learn the software.
Yeah.
Because if you're kind of exploring and you find different looks, you can actually click on the stars here, and you can favorite certain presets. And when we go in here, we can look at our favorites, and you can just see the ones that I've starred in the past.
And I can create my if I want to use a Trey Ratcliffe starting point preset, and I tweak it to make it, you know, it becomes now a Frederick Van preset. Can I save that as a starting point?
Sure. Let's, and you know, this is a great question, and it's so much fun to play with the software. Again, this may not be to your taste, but I'm going to click Midnight Pizza Happiness. And it's Trey Ratcliffe's, one of his signature presets. Takes a second to process that through. But when it's done, I can now, let's say I want to take the glow down a bit. We'll take the glow or turn it off altogether. We'll just click the reset there. Maybe we make a top and bottom adjustment where we darken the bottom of the image. And so now I'm making this my own preset. Mm-hmm. In order to make your own preset, you click over here on this plus symbol, and then you just get a nice little dialog box that comes down where you can say
very cool
FVJ twip. Okay, create new preset. Now what that's going to do is it's going to place that preset in my custom panel. So there you go, right there.
Okay,
and now it's available to use on any. And you can also share these things too.
Okay, right? So I can create my own preset series and put them in the Twip store and sell them if I want.
Exactly.
Very good.
So if I wanted to go farther here, I would just say show presets folder, and that's gonna open up a folder within your Finder, and then you can copy and paste that or make that available to your friends, share it around.
Got it.
That's how you do that.
Very cool.
Okay.
It's that simple. And so one question, when you were bringing those images in, I noticed they were bracketed with EV or exposure value or exposure
Correct.
Compensation.
Okay.
So one of the ways that photographers kind of approach HDR is to bracket using aperture. So they'll do, you know, below and over with aperture, and I've heard that that's incorrect. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I've never actually tried to bracket using aperture. Mine is, I'll set up my Nikon D600, which is a good little mid-range DSLR.
Yeah.
And I'll set it in to do bracketed exposures, and then I can change the exposure value. So to be honest with you, I haven't really done anything with the aperture side.
Yeah, I think the problem with doing HDR with with aperture is you're actually changing the depth of field of the image across all the images, so that when you merge it, then you have out of registration things and some ghosting and those things get introduced. Whereas if you just do exposure value, you're lightening and darkening the overall scene and not changing any of the optical dynamics of the scene.
Right. No, that makes complete sense to me. It's all about sharing information.
So. Yeah. I love it.
Thanks for tuning me up to that.
No, I learned that from one of the people that were demoing Aurora before. So, hey.
Oh, right on. Okay. Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are using it. Hey, you wanted me to go through a quick workflow here.
Yeah, please.
I'm just going to kind of, I already showed you the before and after. Again, we can dial some of these, certainly dial some of these things down if we need to. I mean, if I want the highlights not to be so bright, I can easily do that. But I want to call your attention to this whole layers concept here. We've got our histogram here. We've got our layers. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to add a layer. And this is a new feature in Aurora where you've got just a drop-down menu. It's very easy access. I can choose to create a new layer with one of the HDR frames, the original image, or even a texture. So I can apply a texture down on this image and then, kind of use my blend modes to be a little bit creative. I'm going to start with just adding another adjustment layer, and I'm going to double click on the name here, and maybe I'll call this denoise. Okay, so if there's a little bit of noise in the sky caused by the HDR merging process, a very natural thing to do. And let's say I want to take care of it. So now notice that I'm on the denoise layer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to click down here to HDR denoise. And what I'll do is I'll start to crank that up, start to make it a little bit smooth. And you can see it's affecting the entire image here. So I'm going to come up to my paintbrush, click the paintbrush, and then come down here and just sort of paint the HDR denoise on the sky. Now I'm using my keyboard shortcuts here to lower the diameter of the brush.
Yeah, and I see that thumbnail updating. Yeah, look at that.
You can see over here this live thumbnail. And if I want to be a little bit more precise, I can even show the mask that I'm doing here. Again, if I were doing this for real, I'd be a little bit more precise on it. But really, I'm just kind of coming in here trying to grab the sky. I can click on this button right here to put the brush into an erase mode, so you can see how it's erasing that. Let me get out of that, and so what I've done here is I've brushed denoise into the sky. I can even, Trey had us make a super smooth slider here, so that'll even smooth things out more.
Oh,
but it gives
cool.
you a great control. You got selective noise reduction in your HDR image. And the HDR merge process, the way the algorithms work, by definition, you're mashing a bunch of images together. It can create some artifacts and some noise. So it's really important. That's why HDR denoise is right up here in the top of the tool palette. It kind of worked top to bottom. So what I'd like to do now is I want to show you the polarizing filter. So I'm just going to come in, create a new layer, pop in here, grab the polarizing filter. And this works just like the filter that you might screw on the lens of your camera. So as I adjust the polarizing filter, it's going to give me even a deeper, richer sky. If I want to adjust the tone of that, maybe bring up the sky there. I can do that a little bit as well. Again, the polarizing filter is fantastic for landscape photographers, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty excited about some of the changes made to the top and bottom lighting. So I'll go ahead and I'm going to click on, maybe I'll call this top and bottom just for reference. I'll come in here, click on top and bottom adjustment. Now, before, it only had the exposure control, and you'll be able to see here as I move this shift slider back and forth, it's divided your image along the horizon. Now, if I need to rotate it, I certainly can, mm-hmm. but it's dividing your image top and bottom, and it allows me to let's say in the sky increase the contrast a little bit.
Oh, that's so cool.
Increase the exposure, and again, as I shift this thing along the horizon line, I can blend it so it's a little bit bigger like this, and I can come in here. Let's say on the bottom side of things,
on the bottom side of things, maybe I want to darken that wood just slightly and increase the contrast and vibrance a little bit.
That is really interesting, Kevin, because in as you know, in Lightroom, you can do a gradient mask. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And but it's only, or a gradient adjustment, but it's only affecting from the top to the bottom, and it kind of fades out. It looks like what you guys are doing, you're doing both adjustments on the top and the bottom, and I can independently control those, and then also then move the intersection point wherever I feel like.
Yeah, exactly, and the horizon. So this is I've seen photographers who are doing architectural photography. Maybe they're shooting down a street with some skyscrapers. They'll just flip this top and bottom adjustment, you know, on its side, and now you've got the ability to split the image this way and do something different with it.
Oh, right.
So it's really, really handy. Now you bring up gradients. Just, you know, I don't want to flip between a bunch of images, so I apologize if some of these tools I'm showing I wouldn't normally use here,
yeah.
But I can come in here, choose an adjustment layer, and go to my brush. And this puts me it brings up an information bar that includes things like luminosity masking, but also, guess what? A gradient. So you do have a gradient mask here that operates exactly like your gradient mask that you've talked about. And so there's our gradient mask kind of being applied there. So we've got that. We've also got something called a radial gradient. So let's give my overtaxed computer here a little chance to catch up. So yeah. The radial gradient mask is obviously circular in nature, and I can ovalize it, if you will. Pardon my lingo there. So right now, I've got the mask showing and everything that I would adjust would be outside of those streetlights. Now, if I click this, it inverts the mask. So now I'm only working on this part of the image. So it allows me to come in here and, you know, do some interesting things. Maybe I think the color temperature of those lights need to change a little bit, or need to drop the exposure on them. You know, I can start to make these fine-tune adjustments using the radial gradient here. And again, you know, I may not, we've got, there's so much going on in this image right now that it may not look, you know, fantastic, but suffice to say that the tools are there to bring, you know, any look that you want to the surface.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Kevin, quick question on the masking. So when you're adding a mask, you know, first of all, I missed how you added the mask when you were doing like the denoise layer.
Oh, sure.
How do you add the mask? And then you were painting on that mask with the paintbrush. Mm-hmm. Does if you add an adjustment, it automatically applies to the entire image, right? And then if you pick up a paintbrush, does it then remove the adjustment from the entire image and wait for you to paint the adjustment in?
Well, it actually works both ways. So if you want to just create the mask, like what I'm doing right here on layer four, I've got the brush there, and I'm creating a mask. Mm-hmm. And so let me go ahead and show that mask. So right now I'm creating the mask, but really because I created a new layer, there's really no adjustments set to that yet. So now I can come in and I can, you know, turn off the mask visibility, and I can do some crazy things to just that mask. You can see I brought out mm-hmm. a lot of detail there, right?
Yeah.
The flip side is I could make all those adjustments globally on the palette, and then when I click on the brush, I'm then it takes all the adjustments away globally. So let's say I clear this, and now if I go ahead and let's do some image radiance and be really crazy here. So now I've got some gnarly stuff going on. I come up here to my brush and let's brush this. And so now what I'm doing is I'm only brushing that effect into the decking there.
Got it.
So it works either way. You can create the mask first and apply adjustments to it, or you can apply adjustments to the entire image and then click your brush and only apply it selectively where you want it.
Got it.
Very, very cool.
Very cool. Very cool.
So let me try one more thing for you here. I do want to show you textures real quick because it's a nice little creative tidbit, although it's not entirely new for this version. But we've added a hue to the software. So if I want to bring up maybe some more blues and vibrants, and violets and things like that, I can do that now with the hue adjustment.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. It used to just have the saturation and luminance. A lot of folks said, hey, why don't you put hue in there? So we did. But I especially want to draw your attention to the luminosity masking. This is so super cool. So we're in layer 5 right now. And one of the brand new features of Aurora 17 used to be we decided and created a luminosity mask in the last version. Here, you get to go through and literally click on the zones, the tonal range here, that you want the luminosity mask to be created from. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. So I'm going to go ahead and I've selected this amount, so all these edges here. I selected that as my luminosity mask. It's going to take a second or so because it's obviously doing a very complex selection. You would never try this with a magic wand or even try to brush this kind of stuff in. But at this point, if you look at the thumbnail, you see a very complex little thumbnail there. That's the luminosity mask that was just created. Okay, so now I can go in and I can make a bunch of adjustments. So let's say I just want to advance the details. And again, that's just on those portions of the image that are touched by the luminosity mask.
Yeah.
So you can really dial in some very, very nice, nice details, glows. Again, we'll just kind of increase these a little bit. But it's only happening on that luminosity mask. Here's another cool thing. We added a feature called density and feathering. Okay, so you can come in here and you can move a slider. I might need to be in the luminosity masking mode again in order to do that. But you can come in and you can use a density and feathering to kind of help blend it into the background a little more.
Okay, Kevin, I have a quick question. So a lot of the things you're showing, these layers and masking and luminosity and all that stuff, it seems like this is moving squarely, or at least aiming at a full-featured post-processing application versus, I'm just creating HDR. Did I get that right? Or are you guys just trying to take HDR to the ultimate level and not so much get into post-processing?
Yeah. See, this is why I love talking to you, Frederick, because you hit the nail on the head. We found that so many people were using Aurora as a single image editor. And obviously we want to advance the game and be the finest HDR product we can be out there in the market. But we found that so many creatives and folks that just had maybe a single raw image or maybe even just a single JPEG. They wanted to use the tools to extend the dynamic range. So we've pretty much, as a byproduct of putting everything that we could think of for the HDR photographer into Aurora 2017, I think we've created a pretty solid image editor too.
Yeah,
I would especially say. For folks who want to kind of either expand the dynamic range of a shot that was maybe well composed, but maybe not as well lit as it could have been, or people that just want to go off and explore their creative boundaries. It's a really fun tool for doing that.
And the app is reading raw data, right? So it's not, in other words, it's not generating a JPEG and doing all your adjustments to that. Whenever I make an adjustment, it's rereading that raw data in, so I have the highest quality possible, correct?
Yeah, that's why you're seeing some when you see the processing indicator down here in the lower,
it's crunching.
it's recrunching and that was sort of popularized in our Noises app, and we needed to re-render the image to just show the finest fidelity of noise reduction, and so we've kind of carried that through with our HDR software as well.
Wonderful, man. This is awesome. So this is Aurora 2017, and today, as we record this, is the 29th of September. So you guys are out of pre-launch now, and the software is available to the world?
That's correct. Yeah, we've launched it as of about as we're recording this about 2 hours ago. It went live on the site, and one of the things that your listeners and viewers might be interested in knowing is that we've kept that pre-order price for another week. Mm. So you can pick up Aurora HDR 2017 for $89.
Oh, you kept that for a week. Okay, good.
Next week, yeah. And we're recording this on the 29th of September, so that'll go until October 6th. It's a fantastic deal. Again, I would encourage people, even if they never thought of themselves as an HDR shooter or somebody that's even dabbled in HDR, give it a try. Go to aurorahdr.com, download a free trial version, play around with it, watch some tutorial videos, and see what it can do for you.
Yeah,
you might really be surprised.
I like it. So it's $89 now, and then what is the regular retail price that'll kick in October 6th?
It will go back up to $99. That's the normal retail price.
Okay, got it. $99.
Yeah.
Very so cool.
$10 and you get it right away.
And this is not a subscription, right? This is I purchase it, I own it, kind of deal.
That's correct. Yep, it's what we call a perpetual license. You have it, you own it forever. And again, when you buy the product, you'll have access to any free updates. If you're still looking at the screen here, I go under Aurora HDR 2017. I can check for updates. I can also install plugins. Now, the plugins will install automatically, and what the software does during installation, it searches your hard drive for every host application, Photoshop, Lightroom, Elements, etc., that it finds, and it asks you if you want to install the plugins into those. Mm-hmm. So it's a super easy way to use Aurora anywhere, anywhere your workflow
takes. I'm a confused on that. So it's installing an Aurora plugin for those host applications, Lightroom, Photoshop, etc. Does it run? Does that mean a version of Aurora will run within those apps in the plugin architecture, or does that just trigger a round trip to the standalone Aurora? I make my edits and then it brings me back into the app.
Yeah, no, it's a special plugin version of Aurora.
Okay. So,
and the reason I say that is because there are tools and functions in Aurora, and common things like cropping, right? Well, if you're running Aurora out of Photoshop, you don't need to crop the image in Aurora. So there are some tools that we kind of shed that are provided by the host app. But all the features and functions of Aurora are present in the plugin.
Love it.
Of course, with hosts like Aperture and Lightroom, they have something, and even Photos. We haven't even talked about Photos for Mac. This really extends the editing capabilities of the default photo editor on the Mac.
So there's a Photos extension as well that gets installed.
Okay, yeah, it's fantastic.
Very cool.
So in Lightroom and Aperture, it's run as kind of an external editor. In Photoshop, this is getting down in the weeds, but it's run as a plugin within Photoshop. I do want to mention the Photos application here. Apple did something pretty unique when they created their Photos architecture. It allows guys like us to literally write our software so it seamlessly plugs in and seamlessly operates within the Photos environment. So what that means is it doesn't feel like you're sub-launching this whole other application. It just boop, pops right up there into the editing window. You can adjust your images, say done, and you're done. So it's a very, very smooth editing process in Photos. And as you know, the Photos for Mac app doesn't really have a lot of great editing built into it.
Right.
So tools like our Creative Kit and Aurora HDR 2017 are fantastic additions to the Photos for Mac.
One would argue must have additions to Photos.
I would. I'm just going to put a little vignette on this guy, place center here, and you can see, before and after. There's it without, with. I got a little bit of a crunchy sky there going on, but.
Yeah.
again, this is one of those things where we did a lot of things with one image that I may not have normally done.
Yeah, no, of course. And then I see that in the top left there, I see the export button. I can save it or export it to whatever service, or is that how that works?
Yeah, this is kind of cool. So you can share it directly into social media. You can email it. You can share it to some popular online galleries. Our friends at Smug Mug have been great partners for us. You can open it, and this gets to your round trip. You can open the image in any of the MacFun apps or any of the host apps,
mm-hmm.
right? We added in the new version the ability to sharpen or resize the image on export. So a lot of people were say exporting an image and then, oh, I need to resize it for my website.
Mm-hmm.
I need to resize it for social. So we built that right in there. I do, if you have just another minute,
yeah.
I would love to show you our batch processing.
I was going to ask about that. Yes, please show that, because I swear, Kevin, I was going to ask you, oh, that looks great, but it would be great if I could have a feature where I could create an image and create a size for the web, create a size for, you know, full resolution, create multiple right. versions of that image that then I can go do different things with. So you have that in there?
Well, we do. So what I've done here is I'm in batch processing, and what I've done is I've opened up several folders that have the multiple images. Now, notice that Aurora has analyzed that folder of images, and it's automatically grouped those bracketed images together. Okay, so now when I say continue, I now get just a host of different choices. And don't get too freaked out by the complexity of the dialogue here. It's very simple if you just move top to bottom. Where do you want to export it? I can browse my folder. I can put it in any folder I want on the hard disk. You know, there's some initial settings. These are the exact same settings that were present in the HDR merge dialog. If you're bypassing batch processing, so you might want to say, hey, I just want alignment. I don't think I'm going to have. I didn't take anything that had any moving pieces to it. But if I did, you know, I could look at what the reference image might be. I can select a preset. So this is really cool because let's say I have a favorite preset, and maybe it's a light sharpening with a little bit of image radiance. Mm-hmm. I can come in here and go to my user preferences, and there's my TWIP preset that I created earlier.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I can apply that. I can also then set up my file settings. So there's the sharpening. I could have none, low, medium, high. I can resize the image to a long edge. As you know, Facebook, you know, has certain image dimensions that work optimally. If you want all the images to be bracketed and merged and sized for Facebook, you can do that pretty easily. And then you can name, the files. I know when I'm doing my own processing, I'll name these things by an event, for example, or where I was, and I always set a counter on it as well. So when you're done with that, if this is a custom series of batch processing settings that you'd like to use again and again, go ahead and click the Add button and type the preset name in here, right? Okay. So I can use these exact settings other times, or I can just hit the process. And now it's just going to kind of crank through each one of the exposures.
That's great.
Yeah. Really, very really cool. Fun. Really fun stuff.
So that's cool.
That's a good trip through, through the Aurora 2017.
Love it. So go ahead and switch back to your camera.
Okay.
I'll edit right here.
Okay. Right on. Okay, good.
All right. Well, cool. That was a fantastic walkthrough, and I'm raring to get out and get some shots and play around. I had no idea. I mean, one of the cool things about the demo that you walked through was, which I hit on, was the idea that you guys are, it's not just an HDR application. It's much, much more. It's squarely moving into the post-processing, do pretty much all the things that you need to do with a raw file, including export and batch export with that image from start to finish, not just, okay, I feel like I want to make an HDR image, so I'm going to use Aurora. You can pretty almost use it for 90% of the stuff that you want to do, right?
Well, you know, I think you can, because the tool set that we've created and the way the sliders and algorithms work, you can go completely natural, realistic, you know, really, really sweet stuff. We've got guys that are shooting interior architecture and real estate photography. Of course, the landscape and nature photographers love this tool. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the more creative sorts. So you start cranking the sliders up, and you can get some really nice glows. You can get some great detail, kind of have that classic HDR look. But we wanted to create a tool that really, really spanned the gap. And you hit upon a great point earlier. We're seeing about 65 to 70% of the people that are throwing images into Aurora are just dragging single images in. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to see what it can do with their back catalog of images.
We're
hoping it creates a whole new generation of people that are interested in taking multiple exposures and doing bracketed sets. But even if you don't have a catalog of that stuff, try it on your single images. I guarantee you'll love it.
Love it. Kevin LaRue, thank you for taking the time today. This has been fantastic. Great walkthrough. You sold yourself short in the beginning. You know the software probably inside and out.
You know, I'm no Jim Nix or Trey Ratcliffe or Captain Chemo or Serge Romilly, but I can poke my way through the software.
Very cool. You can hold your own in there. Well, cool, sir. So once again, people can find this where? At MacFun.com?
Yeah, you can start at macfun.com. That's MACPHUN.com. Or if you remember, AuroraHDR.com is two places you can get to the software. Again, you can watch tutorial videos. We've got a webinar series that you can sign up for, where you know myself and another pro photographer will be teaching you the tricks of the trade.
Cool.
So there's a lot of different ways to find out more. Of course, download a free trial as well.
Awesome. Kevin, thanks a ton, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Good talking to you again, Fred.
Okay. Take care.